Hello, and welcome to the ParaUnity Podcast. We have a special guest co-host on our show tonight. She's a connoisseur of antique objects and photographs, and she has also had a special date with Robert the Doll, and she's an exquisite photographer. Hailing from the Metro Detroit area and one half of Mystic Mitten Paranormal Group, Jessica Krutel. Jessica, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay under the current circumstances. I'm starting to go a little stir crazy, so thank you so much for having me on and giving me something to do. How are you guys holding up?
We're doing good. It's a little bit more freedom here on our end than it is on yours. Now, you have a holiday you made today, correct?
That is correct. So since today is March 31st, I did see a little post floating around somewhere on Facebook that folks were trying to celebrate quarantine-oween, so like Halloween in March, just because, you know, those who really enjoy Halloween in the spooky season, you know, it gives us something fun to do, something a little bit different from our day-to-day routines. So folks were encouraged to put out Halloween decorations, to do funny videos online, which I just did one too. I just read scary stories dressed in one of my Halloween characters, which was a lot of fun. But it did seem to be that a lot of people really enjoyed it. So I think us, you know, coming up with and creating all these like fake holidays, essentially, just to help lighten the mood around the world, I think is really important right now.
Yeah, and you actually dressed up as essentially like an antique doll with one of your dolls.
That is correct, yes.
Yeah, I got a kick out of it. I thought it was great.
Thanks.
Well, on tonight's show, we're going to be diving back into our childhood and pulling up some happy memories because, you know, we all need that right now. I'm sure you can remember your friends from when you were a kid. Jessica, did you have an imaginary friend?
I did not. I spent most of my childhood surrounded by friends. I was really fortunate to live on a street that there were a lot of other kids about the same age as mine. So whereas we, you know, played dress up or pretended we were mermaids while swimming in the pool, we kind of had our imaginations and creative juices run wild a little bit differently.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Same here. Anytime I could be outside with my friends, I was all about it. But I know a lot of people actually did have imaginary friends. And it's a great thing to do when you're a kid is to have that person right there beside you. All the activities, all the fun. But what if that friend you had with all those adventures wasn't real? What if it was just a figment of your imagination? A person that lives in your mind, but was so focused on that it actually became real. That's right. Tonight we'll be talking about tulpas.
It's important for us to touch on the topic of imaginary friends first, because that's where we kind of start in our lives. Imaginary friends are also known as pretend friends or invisible friends. They are psychological and social phenomenon where a friendship or an interpersonal relationship takes place in the imagination rather than an external physical reality. Although they may seem very real to their creators, children usually understand that their imaginary friends are not real. First studies focusing on imaginary friends are believed to have conducted during the 1890s. There is little information about the development and appearance of imaginary friends in children. However, Clausen and Passman in 2007 reported that imaginary companions were originally described as being supernatural creatures and spirits that were thought to connect people with their past lives. Adults in early historic times had entities such as household gods and guardian angels and muses that functioned as imaginary companions for creative work. They also provided comfort and guidance. Eventually, the phenomenon and imaginary companions passed on to their children. The era when children began having imaginary friends is unknown, but it is possible the phenomenon appeared in the mid-19th century. That was when childhood was emphasized, and it was important to have time to play and imagine. Children having imaginary friends is not a bad thing at all. The article, Pretend Play and Positive Psychology, Natural Companions, defined many great tools that are seen in children who engage pretend play. These five areas include creativity, coping, emotion regulation, empathy, as well as emotional understanding, as well as hope. Hope seems to be the underlying tool children use in motivation. Children become more motivated when they believe in themselves. Therefore, children will not be discouraged to come up with different ways of thinking because they will have confidence. Imaginary companionship displays immense creativity, helping them to develop their social skills as well as their own creativity. An imaginary companion can be considered the product of a child's creativity, whereas the communication between the imaginary friend and the child is considered to be the process.
That's right. And taking now from, you know, what we've just learned here about being a kid and having that imaginary friend, enjoying our time, playing with them, living our life, having our adventures, we move into a little bit more adult versions of the imaginary friends, which is the tulpas. Now, a tulpa is a concept that's based in mysticism and the paranormal. It is that of a being or object which is created through spiritual or mental powers. Originally, it was based from the Tibetan word of solpra, which means emanation or manifestation. From this, it was adapted into the concepts of tulpa or a thought form. The term thought form is used as early as 1927 in Evan Wentz's translation of the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Spiritualist Alexandra David Neal claimed to have observed these magical practices in the 20th century Tibet. She described tulpas as magic formations generated by a powerful concentration of thought. David Neal believes that these tulpas could develop a mind of its own. And she's even been quoted saying, "Once the tulpa is endowed with enough vitality to be capable of playing the part of a real being, it tends to free itself from its maker's control." This, say Tibetan occultists, happened nearly mechanically, just as the child, when his body is completed and able to live apart, leaves its mother's womb. Now, David Neal claimed to have created such a tulpa in the image of Jolly Friar Tuck. You guys remember the monk from, like, Robin Hood, which later developed a life of its own and had to be destroyed. However, David Neal raised the possibility that her experience was just an illusion. She quoted saying, "I may have created my own hallucination," though she claimed that others could see the thought forms that she created as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that because there's all these different like paranormal research studies where they like go and they basically create an entity and they sit there and they're like, okay, well, you know, like this is going to be their name. These are their personalities and their different traits and stuff. And like this group keeps getting together again and again and again. And then eventually they're able to create said entity, which is really fascinating too in that sense, because it's multiple minds working to create a tulpa rather than just one person individually.
Well, yeah. And I've heard all sorts of conversations about that type of process, about that combinations of people that are all focusing their attention into one singular object to be able to make something happen.
The Western occult understanding of the concept of the thought form is related to Western philosophy and the practice of magic. Occultist William Walker Atkinson, in his book The Human Aura, describes thought forms as simple, ethereal objects emanating from the aura surrounding people, generating from their thoughts and their feelings. He further elaborated in his next book, Clairvoyance and Occult Powers, how experienced practitioners of the occult can produce thought forms from their auras that serve as astral projections, which may or may not look like the person who is projecting them, or as illusions that can only be seen by those with awakened astral senses. The theosophist Annie Besant, in her book Thought Forms, divides them into three classes. The first form is the shape of the person who creates them. Next is the form that resembles objects or people that they may become, ensouled by natured spirits or by the dead. And the lastly, forms that are represented by inherent qualities from the astral or mental planes, such as emotions.
That's right. The concept of a tulpa was popularized and secularized in the Western world through fiction, gaining popularity on television in the late 1990s and 2000s. From 2009 onwards, online groups dedicated to tulpas spawned on the 4chan and Reddit websites. These communities collectively referred to themselves as tulpamancers and offered guides and support for other tulpamancers. The communities gained popularity, and when adult fans of My Little Pony created forums for tulpas of characters from the show, the fans attempted to use meditation and lucid dreaming techniques to create imaginary friends. Surveys conducted explored these communities' demographic, social, and psychological profiles. These individuals that called themselves Tulpamancers treated the Tulpas as a real or somewhat real person. The number of active participants in these online communities is in the low hundreds, and few meetings in persons have actually taken place. They belong to a primarily urban, middle-class Euro-American adolescent and young adult demographic, and they cite loneliness and social anxiety as an incentive to pick up the practice. In fact, 93.7% of respondents expressed that their involvement with the creation of Tulpas has actually made their condition better and led to new and unusual sensory experiences. Some practitioners have sexual and romantic interactions with their Tulpas as well, though that practice is controversial and trending towards taboo. One survey found that 8.5% support a metaphysical explanation of Tulpas, 76.5% support a neurological or physiological explanation, and 14% were just other.
So it's pretty interesting that you bring up My Little Pony, because one of my really good friends is an adult My Little Pony fan. And I have reached out to her earlier today just to be like, hey, you know, like, does this mean anything to you? And she never really thought about it. However, like, her whole life, she's essentially been obsessed with imaginary friends. And she's an author, and she's actually published a book about imaginary friends. All of her arts and crafts are based around them, too, and even the lucid dreaming. So it's kind of interesting to see how those dots are connected without her even really realizing it, which I thought was fascinating. But, I mean, Tulpas, they've definitely been around here, and they're here for us and to support us. And here are a couple of different stories from people that created Tulpas. The first story is from a gentleman named Jay.
While I was creating my first Tulpa, not even 2 months ago, my life was pretty much down in the gutter. Heavy work shifts, trouble falling asleep, and a lack of people to talk to. My few friends were out of town, and this was all taking a toll on me. Additionally, after 18 years spent cultivating imaginary friends, I couldn't get my Tulpa to emit more than a few incoherent sounds, despite it being 1 month of forcing at least a couple hours a day. I was feeling down and decided I'd just chalk it up as another failure. That's when I felt it. A glimpse of a hug. Then, clear as day, someone saying, "You're important to me. Don't give up." From that day, things got better. Or at least I felt happier. On a side note, the reason I first got into imaginary friends and into Tulpas is because I felt both safer and happier whenever I felt like I had someone close to me. Those little peeps in my head helped me during my life through both little and big problems. Our next story, this is from an anonymous female.
Junior high school, or at least eighth grade, was hell on earth for me. My class had a bully who my classmates supported, and my best friend was a toxic, abusive person. And my parents, my mom especially, were the typical, ambitious Asian parents. What ensued there was a chain of unfortunate events. First of all, one girl started bullying me in class out of nowhere, and for no reason except the fact that I was fat. And then the entire class started to join in. Then my best friend, since the start of junior high, started becoming abusive towards me, and thanks to that, my grades started getting the effect from it. At around this time, I started learning about creating my first Tulpa, Faust, who we now call loving, dub Papa Faust. Now, the thing is, Faust was created collaboratively by me and my friend, and we conjoined our headspaces. So, though I was sort of close to him, I really tried to distance myself from him. Then all of a sudden came Valerie, who I would describe as back then. This is the one who walk in who looks like my favorite childhood anime hero. I never really got to be close to him at first, so I tried so hard to distance myself from him due to the same fear. But one day after another stressful day at both school and home at night, I was ready to jump off my house's balcony when he appeared. Started a conversation with me and managed to convince me not to jump because apparently he was scared of death and knows that I was too. Valerie started following me around intensively after that day. From the moment I wake up to the moment I fall asleep, he was there. He was constantly beside me, right on my right side. I could see him there. When no one was there, he was. He was there for me. One thing that I noticed that he fronted a lot too. Once I felt upset, he'd take over me. At one point, he forcefully switched with me when I got scolded by my mom. To be fair, she didn't know about the bullying problem yet, so she thought I was slacking off when my grades had started to sink, and took the scolding head on while we were still talking to me and calming me down. Every time things like this went to absolute hell and I was really, really ready to kill myself, he would immediately stop me, telling me that I have a long way to go, or that if I die, he'll die with me too. At one point, my suicide attempt stopped. I started cutting. Even so, Valerie was still there. Whenever I did that, I recalled I could actually feel his heart sinking. He'd be a bit more quiet than he would be if I didn't cut that day. On the day when I finally stopped cutting, he was really the happiest man on earth. Now, even once the threat of me killing or hurting myself has subsided, and although most of my tulpas had eventually come and go, he's still here. He told me he will always be with me until the day we're both gone for good. And to this day, I'm just so glad I still have him.
That's a really good story. I like how she had that person that was there for her that could really help bring her through a lot of the problems. And that seems to be kind of a trend with tulpas. You know, people create them when they're in a very bad situation and they need that person to turn to. But the thing with it is, not all tulpas are good. Here's a story about a guy being oppressed by his tulpa. Around a year ago, when I was feeling lonely after splitting up with my girlfriend, I started making conversations with myself in my head. The voice that answered steadily evolved into its own character, which started off as a blunt fellow that seemed to hold a conflicting opinion to me on everything. I didn't know anything about tulpas at the time, but I found that this subreddit a month or so ago by chance. After a while, he got nasty. He calls himself Shadow Jason. Jason is my first name. He has turned into a monster that plagues me, my every thought, with nasty and uncalled for criticism. I'm a little overweight, probably around 300 pounds or so, and because of my depression, I let my grooming habits slip occasionally and have a bit of a scruffy half beard below my chin. He calls me a fat neckbeard all the time, and in fact, that's how he refers to me instead of my name. His personality disgusts me, and I feel awful for having him come from a part of my psyche. I was with my grandmother, and he kept telling me to call her a fucking old granny cunt, and other obscenities to point where he was starting to drown out the conversation I was having with her. I ended up dropping the C word to her by mistake. And, I mean, when that's all you hear in your head, it's easy to let it slip. And now my grandma won't talk to me. After explaining Shadow Jason to her, she said I'm possessed by the devil and it's a punishment for my disbelief because I'm an atheist. I haven't told anyone else, and I don't think she has either, and I can't deal with this constant oppression. I could list more experiences, but as I write to you, he's laughing at me and saying stuff like, "Tell them about the time you pissed yourself." I can't take it anymore. I threatened to create more tulpas to help me fight him, and he just says, "I'll fucking do them in," and threatens to hurt me if I do. Is it possible to be physically injured by a tulpa? I'm worried he might try to subliminally influence me into doing something harmful, like with the grandmother incident. Is there anything I can do to suppress him or get him to change? Has anybody ever heard of the issues with a negative tulpa before? I don't know, but Shadow Jason says he would talk to anyone or to their tulpas. And I'm not sure that would help at all, but I doubt he'd listen to anyone else any more than me when I ask him to please stop being so horrible.
Tulpas have been finding our way into our society more and more. From the My Little Pony to Freddy Krueger, tulpas are everywhere. The greatest example of that is Slender Man. For those who are not familiar, Slender Man is a fictional supernatural character that is originated from a creepypasta, an internet meme that was created by Something Awful Forums user Eric Kunston in 2009. He is depicted as a thin, unnaturally tall humanoid with a featureless head and a face and wearing a black suit.
That's right. Stories of Slender Man commonly feature him stalking, abducting, or traumatizing people, particularly children. The Slender Man is not confined to a single narrative, but appears in many different works of fiction, typically composed online. Fiction relating to Slender Man encompasses many media forms, including literature, art, and video series such as the Marble Hornets, wherein he's known as the Operator. Outside of online fiction, the Slender Man has become an internet icon and has influenced popular culture, having been referenced in the video game Minecraft. Beginning in 2014, a moral panic occurred over Slender Man after readers of his fiction were connected to several violent acts, particularly a near-fatal stabbing of a 12-year-old girl in Waukesha, Wisconsin. When the friends of this girl that got stabbed were questioned about this, they literally told the police that Slender Man made them do it.
Media scholar and folklorist Andrew Peck attributes the success of Slender Man to its highly collaborative nature. Because the character and its motives are shrouded in mystery, users can easily adapt existing Slender Man tropes and imagery to create new stories. This ability for the users to tap into the ideas of others while also supplying their own helped inspire the collaborative culture that aroused surrounding the Slender Man. Instead of privileging the choices of certain creators as canon, this collaborative culture informally locates ownership of the creature across the community. In these respects, Slender Man is similar to a campfire story or an urban legend, and the character's success comes from enabling both social interaction and personal acts of creative expression.
Although nearly all users understand that the Slender Man is not real, they suspend that disbelief in order to become more engrossed when telling or listening to these stories. This adds a sense of authenticity to Slender Man legend performances and blurs the line between legend and reality, keeping the creature as an object of legend dialectic. This ambiguity has led some to the confusion over the character's origin and purpose. Only 5 months after his creation, George Norrie's Coast to Coast AM, which is a radio call-in show devoted to the paranormal and conspiracy theories, began to receive calls asking about the Slender Man. 2 years later, an article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune described his origins as difficult to pinpoint. Eric Knudsen has commented that many people, despite understanding that Slender Man was created on Something Awful forums, still entertain the possibility that he might be real.
Shara Chess describes the Slender Man as a metaphor for the helplessness and power differentials and anonymous forces. Peck sees parallels between Slender Man and common anxieties about the digital age, such as feelings of constant connectedness in unknown third-party observation. Similarly, Ty Von Horn, a writer for The Elm, suggested that Slender Man represents modern fear of the unknown. In an age flooded with information, people have become so unaccustomed to the ignorance that they now fear, which they cannot understand. Troy Reichner, the creator of Marble Hornets, ascribes the terror of Slender Man to its malleability. People can shape it into whatever frightens them the most. Tina Marie Boyer noted that Slender Man is now a prohibitive monster, but the cultural boundaries that he guards are not very clear. Victims do not know when they have violated or crossed them. One thing that's really interesting about Slender Man and how he's able to kind of like shape shift and like take on, you know, all these like different forms of like what we truly fear the most. I don't know, Brandon, if you've ever watched X-Files.
Oh, I used to watch that show all the time.
Is the best episode. I want to say it's season 6, maybe. I'll have to look it up and send it to you if you don't recall it. But it was the episode where it was crossover with cops. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
And there's this monster that is becoming whatever your biggest fear is. And so one person sees it and describes it as like her pimp. Another one is like this like bee monster that his brother used to tease him about. One was a werewolf. Like, it is so crazy. Like, how much fear you have, like, when it's something that's, like, very fluid, like Slender Man is, where it can kind of, like, become really what you are most afraid of. Man, it really gets your heart pumping. So if anyone hasn't seen that episode, look it up, because it's really crazy. It's really, really crazy.
Well, and the funniest part about it, too, is even in children or teenage type stuff, it's referenced in there too when you don't realize it. Like, I'm going to throw out my nerd here for a second, but look at Harry Potter. I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with that. And I can't think of which book it is right now. They fight the monster in the closet, a bogart, or however they pronounce it. And it literally takes the form of whatever scares you most, just like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Jessica, what do you think about tulpas? I mean, is that something that you think you can get behind or not really?
You know, I'm not sure. I feel like it kind of falls within like a realm of like, if you are, you know, strong enough and you're in a safe enough mental space where you'd be able to create something and you know that it's not going to harm you, just because you don't want to put risking hurting yourself or others, either emotionally or physically. You don't want to put anybody in that path. So I think if you were to try to double with it, like, obviously just tread very lightly, make sure that you do things very safely. Might not even be a bad idea to have some form of like a tulpa safe word, if you will. Some sort of way where you can draw that line and be like, okay, this is where, like, this is the line you cannot cross, just to make sure that you are able to like stay safe and keep your loved ones around you safe as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I mean, I personally kind of put it into the same type of premise of almost like a Ouija board or a talking board. I mean, I'm not going to mess with it, but I know plenty of people do. And I mean, that's on you. I mean, if it's something that you're interested in and you feel comfortable with, I mean, enjoy yourself. But yeah, like you said, you really have to be careful and have a safe word or whatever. And I mean, we're not going to go back into the topic of people having these really intimate relationships with these things. One thing I am going to put out there, and especially now with all this COVID-19 and coronavirus stuff going on with the self-isolation and the staying in your homes, really think about it before you decide, oh, I'm going to make a tulpa to keep me company through this. Because it literally can change on a dime with whatever your attitudes are. And, I mean, here at the ParaUnity Podcast, we're not going to condone any actions that you may take in regards to tulpas. If you choose to make one, then that's on you. And remember, just treat it with respect, like you would with anything. You know, do your research, be safe. Thanks again to Jessica from Mystic Mint and Paranormal in Detroit for being our co-host on tonight's show. Jess, it's been so enjoyable having you tonight on the show. Well, every show that you've been on. It's actually been getting close to a year since you and Hillary were first on. I mean, it's been a wild ride ever since.
That's crazy. That's almost been a year.
Yeah, it really has. I remember the first time I talked to you, I was actually in a hotel room in Des Moines, Iowa.
And it was storming.
Yes, it was storming, and I was extremely concerned that I wasn't going to be able to talk to you guys with all the lightning flashing outside the hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I guess. And then we got the weird monster sounds that were when we tried to do our group chat the one night. Yeah, it definitely has been a wild ride.
It has.
Like I said, thanks for being on the show and helping out tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to start doing more of this, especially just to kind of give you your social interaction outside of your house.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
And we want to thank all of you as well for tuning in. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please remember to leave us 5 stars or give us a review. This will help us get the word out about the show, and we want to hear your feedback to help make the show better. If you're an Android listener, you can follow us on Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, or Google Podcasts, so you never miss an episode. Remember, if you like the show, tell a friend. Tell a tulpa. They're all your friends, right? You can find us on any podcast directory. My name is Brandon.
And I am Jessica.
And you've been listening to the best place to bring our paranormal teams a little closer together, the ParaUnity Podcast.